You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey, folks. Ben Mathis here with a couple important announcements. You know that we have great advertisers that support the show and keep it free for you to listen. And one of the reasons why advertisers love Kick-Ass News is that they know the show has amazing listeners. Right now, we have a survey that I'd like you to take to help us learn more about our audience. Just go to podsurvey.com/kick. The survey will only take 5 minutes. We're going to ask you some questions about yourself and what you like to buy, but it's completely anonymous, and your answers will help us find advertisers that are well matched to you, your interests, and the show. And as a way of saying thank you, when you're finished, you can enter a monthly drawing to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Even if you've taken our podcast listener survey before, I'd like to ask you to take this one and help support the show. It'll be a big help to me, and don't forget that you have a chance to win that $100 Amazon gift card. Once again, that's podsurvey.com/kick. That's K-I-C-K. Thanks for helping us find the best advertisers so that we can keep the show free. Also, the holidays are upon us, and if you're like me, you'll skip the madness of the stores and do most of your shopping on Amazon this year. And if you're going to be doing that anyway, then help support the show by going to the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copying and pasting the Amazon link there into your web browser before you start ordering. Then Amazon will toss us a little something for every purchase you make this holiday season. You have to shop for gifts anyways. They've got just about everything you can imagine on Amazon delivered right to your door. It won't cost you anything extra, and you can help support the show. So it's kind of like giving two gifts for the price of one this year. And that, my friends, is what you call a Christmas miracle. So again, go to the sponsor page at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser before you start shopping. And if you feel extra generous this Christmas, then make a donation to keep us going over here at gofundme.com/kickassnews. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast.
You've got mail.
Remember that sound? Long before Google or Amazon or Skype, those three little words were our first introduction to the whole idea of a World Wide Web. It was the brainchild of Steve Case, the co-founder and former CEO of America Online. In the very earliest days of the Internet, he anticipated that many people might view the concept of communicating through a computer as, well, impersonal. So he decided to add a welcoming voice to greet users and let them know when they received an email. It just so happened that one of his customer service team members had a husband who did voiceovers, and the rest, as they say, is history. Under Steve Case's leadership, AOL handled nearly half of all internet traffic at its peak and drove the worldwide adoption of a medium that has transformed business and society. AOL was the top-performing company of the 90s and the very first internet IPO. And in 2000, Steve negotiated the largest merger in business history between the media giant Time Warner and the company he started. After retiring as chairman of AOL Time Warner, Steve Case co-founded the D.C.-based investment firm Revolution, where as chairman and CEO, he partners with the next generation of entrepreneurs to build businesses such as Zipcar, Sweetgreen, and others. He also fosters entrepreneurship through President Obama's Startup America partnership and the Case Foundation, which uses the internet and entrepreneurial approaches to strengthen society. In case you can't tell, entrepreneurship is kind of a big thing with Steve Case. He's written about it in his new book, Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. In it, he envisions what he calls the third wave of the internet's evolution, in which the so-called Internet of Things becomes the Internet of Everything. In other words, the internet is going to be so ingrained in every aspect of our lives that we won't even use the word internet anymore. Today, Steve Case will talk about the business sectors that stand to benefit the most in the third wave and the key factors that will separate the successful startups from the failures. He'll explain why entrepreneurs in the third wave may have to accept that government will play a larger role in the next tech boom, and why disruptive industries won't necessarily spring up in Silicon Valley, but all over the country in places like Nashville, Detroit, and Kansas City. He'll reminisce about the early days of the internet and the lessons learned as he took AOL from an idea that no one even knew they wanted to the biggest merger in history. Coming up with Steve Case in just a moment. I'm joined today by Steve Case. He's the co-founder and former CEO of America Online and former chairman of AOL Time Warner. These days, he's chairman and CEO of Revolution, a venture capital firm that's funding the startups of what he calls the third wave of the internet. He talks about it in his new book, Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. Steve Case, thanks for joining me.
Great to be with you.
Well, I enjoyed the book, and you didn't want to write just a regular old memoir.
Right.
And this is, as you say, part memoir, part manifesto, and part playbook for the future. The title is a nod to the futurist Alvin Toffler, who was the one who described kind of the three waves of societal evolution, the agrarian economy, then the Industrial Revolution, and then he described the third wave, which was going to be the age of technology that right. we're in right now. Now, you apply this term to the internet. So explain, what are the three phases or waves of the internet?
Sure. But first, I should say, I read that Alvin Toffler book, The Third Wave, when I was a senior in college in 1980. I was completely mesmerized by it. It really kind of, he talked about what we now think of as the internet, but about 36 years ago when that book came out, it was still very futuristic. And the notion of an electronic cottage and new ways to connect to people and access information, I just thought his vision was very compelling. So that's really the path I've been on for nearly four decades now after reading that book. So when I decided to finally write a book, I decided to kind of, you know, give a nod to Toffler for inspiring me and open the book with sort of that the stories of how how impactful that book was for me. As you say, the Toffler view of the three waves was sort of the agriculture revolution, then the industrial revolution, then the technology revolution. You know, my focus of the three waves is more internet centric, and really the first wave of the internet was building the infrastructure, getting everybody connected. The second wave was building apps and services on top of the internet. And the third wave, which is really just beginning, is integrating the internet in more seamless and pervasive ways throughout our lives. And the reason I decided to finally write a book, people have talked to me over the years about wanting to write something about this or something about that, is I realized that the third wave that's just beginning to develop is going to be quite different than the second wave, but actually somewhat similar to some of the dynamics in the first wave. And that really led me to be able to write a book that's mostly about the future, but does tell some of the stories of those early days of the internet. It seems crazy now, but when we started AOL, it was 31 years ago, 1985. Yeah. Only 3% of people were online And they're only online 1 hour a week. So it was pretty early days. And we said we wanted to get America online, get the world online. You know, that it took a while. It took us really a decade, but that's really defined not just AOL, but Cisco and Microsoft and IBM and many other companies were all Sun were part of that kind of first wave, building the software, building the networks, building the servers, essentially building the foundation, building the on ramps, and then educating people why they should get connected. That really was sort of the consumer internet, sort of 1985 to 2000. That was sort of the key, and that then set the stage for this app economy we've seen in the second wave, Twitter and Facebook and Waze and Snapchat, mostly apps that have been riding on top of the internet. And that's had a profound impact on our lives as well. But third wave really is the next big leap, and it's going to change how we think about healthcare and education and energy and transportation, food, some big sectors of our economy, and frankly, important aspects of our lives. So that's what led me to write the book. And as you said, it's a little bit of a memoir, but also a little bit of a manifesto and also a little bit of a playbook in terms of how people can think about the future.
You know, I can still remember when I was growing up, AOL being the only game going.
Yeah,
and you talk
about like
that.
We like
millennials
that.
Don't even realize that there was a time when the internet was AOL,
right?
For all practical purposes.
No, particularly in the 90s, mid to late 90s, about half of all the internet traffic in the United States went through AOL, and it was a mix of services, some that were unique and exclusive to AOL, but also an on-ramp to the full internet. So we used to talk about it being the internet and a whole lot more. And we talked about it being so easy to use. No wonder it's number one. Those were some of the taglines we had. And the AOL really did play an important role in educating people about the internet and connecting people, to the internet. And a lot of the features that we launched now 25, 30 years ago, like instant messaging and buddy lists, things like that, are now pretty significant parts of people's lives across a whole variety of services and devices. We've gone from being mostly about the PC in the first wave to mostly about phones in the second wave. But the services, particularly those communications features, what we call community services, now we think of them more as social services, have always been a pretty fundamental part of the medium.
Yeah, and it's funny because throughout the first part of the book, much of it feels like I'm watching the second season of Halt and Catch Fire. And, because you see how you were evolving and no one had ever done this. And you guys trying to convince people that there was actually a market for communicating over the internet. And along the road to AOL, you experienced some bumps along the way with previous ventures that would eventually lead to AOL. And I think there are some instructive moments in there about being flexible and agile and being able to pivot and adjust to changing situations. Talk about that as it might be useful in the third wave.
I think that's true. We learned a lot in that first wave that sometimes revolutions happen in evolutionary ways. And you have to keep your eye on the prize, your eye on what you're trying to accomplish. In our case, just trying to make the internet part of everyday life. But be more flexible and nimble and, as you say, agile in terms of how you pursue that. Because sometimes things you think are going to work aren't going to work. Sometimes partnerships you think are going to be transformative end up blowing up and you're not able to capitalize on them. So we had a punch of that. The first venture I joined when I moved to the Washington, D.C. area in 1983, it seemed like a good idea, but failed. And so it looked like a kind of disaster. But two of the people I met there, Mark Seraf and Jim Kimsey, I ended up starting AOL 2 years later in 1985. So out of that kind of disaster, came something better. And it took us, really better part of a decade to take the idea of AOL and turn it into a significant business. And there are a lot of kind of fits and starts, kind of two steps forward, one step back. And I talk obviously about some of those in the book. But I think that is a lesson for entrepreneurs as they think about the third wave. The first wave was hard because you had to get all these partnerships together. You had to pull all the pieces together. You had to get modems built into PCs. You had to get communications costs reduced because when we first started, it was about $10 an hour to get connected. There are a lot of different challenges. And you just had to kind of whack away at those challenges. And eventually, things started getting traction. I think in the third wave, it's going to be similar. It's going to be hard to revolutionize healthcare. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to change how classroom learning happens. It's complicated. And other sectors, energy, food, so forth, these are complicated things. They're going to take some time. And so some of those lessons around perseverance that we learned kind of the hard way, I guess, in the first wave, I think are going to become important for innovators who are thinking about taking on some of these challenges in the third wave.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that it was probably very hard for you when you've put so much energy into one game plan to then go in a completely different direction and right. to recognize that that you got to cut your losses and yeah. you know, and there's opportunity there. There's opportunity, and defeat in one area might present an opportunity elsewhere. What was it that's that aha moment for you when you were young and starting out where you would realize, okay, you know, take a breath, step back?
Well, I do think that it goes back to that reading of the Toffler book when I was in college. I think that kind of set a path for me, kind of set a, you know, something to aim for. The idea of trying to get everybody online, trying to create this digital world, trying to make the internet part of everyday life, really was what was driving me. And I just kind of kept at it and didn't view challenges as kind of permanent setbacks, but simply kind of barriers to, you know, work through. And our team, you know, had the similar kind of, you know, perspective. They, you know, they really believed in the idea and just recognized, you know, you know, just kind of keep going. You just, you know, it just sometimes the things you think are going to work just don't work. But if you give up, then you're not going to have the opportunity to change the world. Yeah. It requires, you know, kind of perseverance. And, you know, the evidence that the people who actually did get connected, who were part of, yeah, well, they loved it. And, you know, so we realized if we could figure out a way to make it easier to use and more useful and more fun and more affordable, that eventually we could break through, you know, but it was going to take some time.
Well, you talk about the second wave being the Internet of Things, mm-hmm. which I almost get tired of hearing at this right. point. You say that if the second wave was the Internet of Things, then the third wave is going to be the Internet of Everything, to right. the point that we probably won't even say the word internet.
Right.
It'll just be ingrained. It'll be in everything. What are the sectors that you see as being transformed in the third wave of the internet?
Well, pretty much everything. I mean, if you think about the first and second wave, it's amazing how much progress we've made in taking the idea of the internet and making it part of everyday life. And it's changed in pretty profound ways, certain aspects of our lives, and really disrupted in big ways, the communications industry, the media industry, things like that. But I would argue that most of the things that we care most about in our lives, like how do we stay healthy, or how do we educate our kids, or how do we, you know, kind of be smart about moving around cities in terms of transportation systems, smart cities, things like that. How do we think about, you know, interesting new ways within the financial sector to reach out to people who are unbanked and don't really have access to, you know, credit and things like that? There's a lot of things that are actually pretty important that haven't changed that much in the first wave or second wave. I think they're going to change a lot in the third wave. But again, the reason I wrote the book was I think it's going to require a different mindset and a different playbook. The second wave, to a large extent, was about software. It was about apps. And the big successes, you know, figured out a way, whether, again, the Instagram or Snapchat or you name it, to create an interesting app that got virally adopted and then suddenly went from a little idea to a big company virtually overnight. In the third wave, of course, the software is going to be important. Of course, the internet is going to be important. But it's how it gets connected with the rest of our lives. How do you actually take that and make it useful so teachers use it in classrooms? How do you figure out better ways for doctors to help us with chronic diseases or life-threatening diseases with more kind of precision, you know, kind of medicine? These are hard problems, and it's going to require this different mindset and different playbook. And perseverance is going to be part of it. You know, partnerships are going to be part of it. You know, having strategic partners, I think, are going to be critical. And policy is going to be, you know, part of it. You know, these are regulated sectors, and understanding that and figuring out a way to be constructive around, you know, engaging with governments around some of these issues are going to be important as well. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for innovation. And much of that will come from the small companies, the startups. Some of it's going to come from the big companies. I think they have assets that they can leverage in the third wave. If they're nimble, if they're agile, and if they figure out a way to not just innovate within their company, but innovate around their company, kind of build a network around their company, including partnering with the entrepreneurs. So that's why I think it's just a different mindset in this third wave.
Yeah, and one of the things that you talk about being key is speed.
Right.
And always looking in the rearview mirror for who's coming up behind you. And it seems like we're almost at a point of hyperspeed. You know,
right.
In the days of Coca-Cola, you would have a good amount of lead
right.
time, and you would be aware of your enemies coming up behind you. But nowadays, it seems like the next competitor could come out of nowhere and it could be in a matter of a couple of months.
Yeah, so. I think that's true. And I saw some really interesting things in the second wave. For example, Airbnb is now the largest hospitality provider in the world. They didn't exist 10 years ago. And they don't even own any hotel rooms. That's kind of weird. Uber is now the largest transportation company. They don't own cars. Amazon's the largest retailer. They actually don't have stores. Facebook's the largest media company. They actually don't create content. So it's really interesting to see how this has played out over this last decade and the second wave. And it's going to be similar in the third wave. Is there big opportunities for change, but it's going to require a bit more of this mindset. Some of the things, though, are going to take longer. It's actually going to take longer to and require more perseverance to be successful because of the systems challenges that some of these sectors have, like healthcare or the school system. It's not just about dropping the app in the app store. It's much more complicated. So we'll require more patience and perseverance. But that's not to say that the big incumbents can't get complacent, because they might get surprised. A decade ago, Apple wasn't in the music business. Now they're the leader. Google wasn't in the phone business. Now they're a leader. So these things can come out of nowhere and surprise you.
And one of the examples that you bring up in here that I think is instructive for the third wave is you talk about a point where AOL kind of pulled a fast one on your competitor, Prodigy.
Right.
And took a lot of their customers. And it was about a year before they even knew what was happening. Talk about what you did there.
Well, Prodigy was a service launched, I guess, 20, 25 years ago as a partnership.
That's right. For anyone who doesn't remember.
IBM and Sears. Yeah, most of them
have to tell people.
Prodigy? What's a Prodigy? But it was IBM and Sears, two great American companies, basically did a joint venture to try to be the leader in the consumer internet. Launched a service called Prodigy. Spent $1 billion to launch it. It's incredible. And we were a little company. We had raised $1 million in our first round of financing. So it was we knew we couldn't kind of win in any kind of head-to-head combat. So we had to be clever and kind of have a more of a, kind of guerrilla tactics. One of them was Prodigy decided to sell essentially sponsored email, which is, before things like that became popular. They basically said, we need to generate some additional revenue. We're going to sell, email access to our customers. And so we approached some salesperson at Prodigy and said, we'd like to buy some of those emails to basically promote AOL to the Prodigy customers. Because they were eager, that particularly sales exec was eager to
approach them as AOL, or was there a shell company or something?
No, we approached them as
as AOL.
No, we positioned it as, we were more a complimentary service. They were focused on things like commerce. We were focused on things like community. And so we said, your customers would also be interested in some of our features. Now, they realized after about a year that some of the things we're offering are pretty popular and they needed to offer them as well. And B, it was kind of dumb for them to spend all that money marketing. I spent hundreds of millions of dollars marketing, and we spent a few million dollars kind of stealing away some of their best customers. So we knew it wouldn't last forever, but it lasted for a year. And I think it was a reminder to me that sometimes large companies, because they're so vast, just aren't as thinking about the future, aren't quite as agile, aren't quite as flexible. And sometimes little companies can kind of take advantage of that. There is a little bit of a David and Goliath aspect to it. And the Goliath nature of some of this is a little scary because these are big, powerful companies. But they're also, like in the David and Goliath story, their weakness is, their strength, which is their bulk. And sometimes that can be used against them. And that was a case where we were able to capitalize on Prodigy being this giant company and not really paying attention to what we were doing off on the side, and frankly, until it was too late. And we quickly were bigger than they were. And after a few more years, they basically went out of business.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because you say that the third wave will not necessarily be the exclusive domain of startups. By its very nature, the third wave lends itself to legacy companies like, say, Kraft or Ford, if they're smart enough and fast enough to take advantage of it. What are some of the factors that will separate the big lumbering dinosaurs from the companies that are able to evolve and thrive in the third wave?
Well, the key is really having leadership that's leaning into the future, thinking about the future. As companies get larger, they tend to shift from kind of being these attackers, these disruptors, these innovators, to being more the defenders, the protectors. They're really more focused on managing what's there as opposed to maximizing what might be possible. And of course, they'd rather grow faster as opposed to slower, but they mostly want to protect what they have. It's sort of in sports, there's a concept of when you have a lead, you're going to like the protect defense. And big mm-hmm. companies tend to kind of be executing that protect defense. And sometimes that works, but sometimes it doesn't work. And sometimes you need to be more focused on where things are going and do it with more agility and more urgency. A great example I mentioned in the book is the story of Eastman Kodak. It's, you know, when I was a kid, Kodak was one of the great American companies, really iconic, really owned photography. You thought of photography, you thought of Kodak. And they eventually went bankrupt. And the reason they went bankrupt is because of digital photography, not surprisingly. But what's surprising is that Kodak engineers actually invented digital photography. It was their idea.
Right.
But the leadership didn't focus on it enough, didn't invest in it enough. We're kind of coasting on the laurels of their core business, selling prints and chemicals and stuff. And so they didn't really want to see digital photography take off. So they didn't invest heavily in it. Eventually, others did, and they got left behind. So I think that's a lesson for big companies, that just because you're big now doesn't mean you'll be big tomorrow. You've got to continue to focus on the future, and you've got to focus on partnering with people that are helping to create that future.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with Steve Case, author of Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. Hey folks, do you like reading but find it's getting harder and harder to make time to curl up with a good book? Well, there's a solution. Give audiobooks a try. They're perfect for your commute to work or working out at the gym, a relaxing bath, or any time really. And right now, you can take an audiobook for a spin with a special promotion just for our listeners from Audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews to get a free 30-day trial and download any of Audible's 180,000 titles entirely for free. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Steve Case, the author of Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. Well, let's talk about some of the advice that you give to startups who want to take advantage of this internet of everything in the third wave. You refer to three P's that are the keys to success in the third wave: partnership, policy, and perseverance. First of all, let's talk about partnership. You say it's key because most third wave industries have gatekeepers. What kind of partnerships should startups be looking for in that kind of environment?
Well, it depends obviously what sector you're focused on, but right. If you take healthcare as an example, if you really want to revolutionize healthcare, you kind of have to work with doctors, you kind of have to work with hospitals, you kind of have to work with the health plans. And so it's not just about an app you create, it's how you partner with the people that are really on the ground delivering healthcare services, paying for healthcare services. And that makes it more challenging. Frankly, it's hard to break into a hospital, hard to get them to adopt your technology. But I think that's what's going to be required to really have a significant impact and build a significant business. Similarly, there's a lot of companies working on different devices and sensors with, sort of these Internet of Things or Internet of Everything concept. But there's some big companies like GE and IBM. They're very focused on the industrial internet, very focused on smart cities. And they're really focused on being systems integrators, partnering with lots of technologies, lots of companies, and connecting the dots for whole cities. And so if you're a startup, you're probably not going to be able to convince a city to adopt your technology, but you probably can convince GE to adopt your technology as part of an overall citywide solution. So that's a case where you'll get more traction more quickly if you figure out a way to partner. I think the startups in the third wave will need those big companies. The big companies in the third wave will need those startups. It just requires both of them to dance a little differently. And I cite in the book an African proverb that I think will really kind of inform the third wave, which is, you want to go quickly, you can go alone. But if you want to go far, you must go together. I think that really is going to be a key dynamic in the third wave.
And all of this is somewhat reminiscent of the biggest merger in business history, the AOL Time Warner merger, which you talk about at length in this book. At the time, it seemed like it was a perfect match made in heaven.
Right.
An internet company and a big media company that had broadband services. and all that. And then it all seemed to fall apart. What went wrong there? And perhaps what are some lessons that can be taken from that?
Well, the key lesson is, I cite in the book Thomas Edison, who over a century ago said, vision without execution is hallucination. The idea of the merger of AOL and Time Warner did make sense. It should have been the dream merger because the complementary skills and assets both companies kind of had. But the reality is we couldn't execute against that vision, and that ultimately came down to people and priorities. Instead of running it in an integrated way, we're all in this together, one team, let's take on the future. It ended up being different silos, different, fiefdoms, people fighting with each other. Digital music is a good example. When we launched the merger or announced it in 2000, this was years before Apple launched the iPod or the iTunes store, probably 5 years before that. And AOL and Time Warner should have been the leader. AOL was a leading internet company. Yeah. Time Warner owned a cable system. It was the largest broadband provider and also owned Warner Music, the largest music company. How can they not come together and lead the way in digital music? Well, the reality is they didn't really work together. Everybody had different plans and were doing their own things independently. And so what could have been a great opportunity to lead the way in digital music or lead the way in digital video or lead the way in many other sectors ended up being a missed opportunity. So the lesson for me, which is I obviously discussed in the book, is it ultimately is about people. It's ultimately about culture. If you have the right team working together in the right way, I think anything is possible. If you don't, nothing's possible. And we learned that sadly with that merger.
Yeah, and I have to imagine it was heartbreaking for you looking back when you talk in the book about how you wanted to buy Google
right.
in the very early days. You wanted to buy Apple. There were a lot of missed opportunities there that I guess were just the result of the Time Warner side just not getting it.
Future was. It's a mix of things. And after we did end up buying 5% of Google as part of a deal, and that ended up being a smart thing. But in retrospect, it would have been better to buy all of it. And we toyed with the idea of some other mergers, acquisitions, including when Apple was still struggling. Steve Jobs had just gone back in, but hadn't really seen a resurgence yet. But there just wasn't a lot of interest in another acquisition. And at the time, the perception was Apple was really just a personal computer hardware company, and but they hadn't really been that successful in software or services yet. And so I think there are a lot of missed opportunities. And again, it's disappointing for me. I think it's disappointing for everybody involved with AOL and Time Warner. But hopefully some of the lessons learned from that, which I try to describe in the book, will be helpful to the next generation of innovators, whether they be the small companies or the large companies trying to figure out how to embrace the future.
Well, the second P that you talk about as one of the keys to success in the third wave might be anathema to many free market Ayn Rand type entrepreneurs out there. But you say that the third wave companies are going to have to get along with the government and accept regulation or die. Why is government relations going to be a make or break for startups?
Well, again, it depends what you're trying to do. And there's certainly different parts of the third wave where you could attack them that don't necessarily require government involvement. And I'm not saying it's going to be fun having regulations or going to be fun engaging with the government. I understand that libertarian anti-government aspect. I understand that working with government, dealing with regulations can be very frustrating and cumbersome and slow down, entrepreneurs slow down innovation. That's all true. But what's also true is that we're going to have, and most countries are going to have, regulations around the big sectors that are up for grabs in the third wave. And there are going to be things, for example, in the food sector to make sure the food our kids eat at school is not going to make them sick, or the drugs our parents take isn't going to kill them, or that the drones flying in the sky or the autonomous driverless cars on our roads are not going to create havoc in our communities. That's just the nature of the innovation that's possible in the third wave. So understanding that and saying that part of the success of the innovators in the third wave is integrating that policy aspect into their thinking is going to be important. It's not going to be just about the software. It's going to also be about understanding the policy and figuring out ways to create the right kind of partnerships. And the people who understand that are going to be successful. The people who don't probably won't be. And that's part of the reason I wrote the book, because I realized that the first wave was really made possible by those three P's, the importance of partnership, the importance of a policy, the importance of perseverance. Less so in the second wave, basically because it was mostly about apps. There were overnight successes. The government generally wasn't involved with the, with things like Facebook and Twitter and so forth. It was a different playbook, and the playbook in the third wave is going to change. And some of those lessons from the first wave are going to be, I think, very instructive in the third wave. And the role of government, role of policy is certainly part of that.
Right. And you also say that it's a two-way street. The government is going to have to innovate itself, lest it be, quote unquote, disrupted by other countries like India, China, Brazil, et cetera. One of the things that you say is key to that is you say, aside from more H-1 visas, you propose a startup visa program. What would that entail?
Well, it's been kicked around for a decade. It just hasn't really gotten through Congress yet. And the basic idea is if you come to the United States and you're getting a PhD, for example, at Carnegie Mellon or Stanford or Caltech or wherever, and you want to stay in this country, you should have the right to stay in this country and the ability to stay in this country. And the reason that's important is once these people have these great educations, we'd rather have them be in our country creating innovative things that create the jobs and drive the economic growth. Not giving them this great education, then kicking them out, and forcing them to go to some other country that essentially will end up competing with our country. So, and one example I mentioned in the book is there's an entrepreneur who graduated from Wharton, wanted to stay in the United States and started a company, but couldn't extend his visa, so was forced to leave, move back, in his case, to India, which is where he was from. And that company called Snapdeal now has 5,000 employees and it's worth $5 billion and it's in India. He wanted that to be in America. So the startup visa idea is really more, how do we make sure that we win what's now a global battle for talent and people who do want to be part of the American innovation economy are able to create the companies here that create the jobs here and drive the economic growth here.
Well, someone needs to tell Donald Trump this, I think.
Well, I kind of stay out of the politics side, but I do recognize immigration is super complicated and super emotional. There are many, many facets to it. But in this particular instance, once we get through the presidential election, whoever is in the White House come January, I hope they do put these issues around making sure we remain the most innovative, entrepreneurial nation first and foremost. And immigration is one part that needs attention.
Well, yeah. And you also say that politicians need to distinguish between small businesses and startups. Why is that distinction so important?
Well, I think that folks in government, whether it's Sacramento or Washington, D.C. or Brussels or what have you, generally have this view that business is sort of monolithic. It's sort of like this the marketplace. And the reality is there's three different aspects of the business world. They all function a little different. They all have different priorities. One are the small businesses that are basically the restaurants and dry cleaners, sort of the Main Street businesses, which actually are very important in aggregate, account for a lot of jobs, but don't account for a lot of net job growth. One restaurant might open, another restaurant might close, but net, it doesn't generate a lot of jobs. Some of the big companies, the Fortune 500 companies, don't generate a lot of net jobs. Some are growing, some are declining. As a group, it's relatively static. The data in the Kauffman Foundation tracks, it says all the real job growth is coming from these young high-growth startups. And so if you want to create more jobs, you want to drive more growth, you got to make it easier for more entrepreneurs in more places with various ideas to have a shot. And you need to level the playing field so everybody has a shot. That's the best way to kind of move the country forward.
Yeah, and politicians, they love to talk about small businesses. That's kind of one of those buzzwords that they love to throw into speeches, but you don't hear them talking about startups and innovation quite as much.
No, it needs more attention. Even the presidential debates on both sides this year, there have been dozens of debates, hundreds of questions. Very few are these issues around innovation and entrepreneurship. I think that's disappointing. Hopefully that will change as we head to November.
Yeah. Well, before we go, let's talk about that last P, perseverance. AOL would not have been born into existence were it not for you and your team's perseverance. What do you have to say to those ambitious young people, those millennials who are getting ready to start up a business of their own in the third wave here?
Well, obviously, anybody wants to create any business and do something entrepreneurial, I celebrate, I support. But I hope the next wave of entrepreneurs really are focused on important aspects of our lives, things we've talked about in the opportunities of the third wave, like improving education, improving healthcare, or energy, or transportation, or food, and recognize there are going to be harder problems to solve. They are going to require more perseverance. They are going to require more partnerships. They're going to require more engagement in policy, but they're important. They're important, you know, challenges to address. And I hope they bring a perspective while they're trying to build a company that's profitable, that's also a company that has impact, that has purpose, what some people call impact investing. I think that aspect's important. And hopefully we'll also figure out a way to level the playing field so everybody with ideas has a shot, irrespective of where they happen to live or what their backgrounds are. And having a more inclusive approach to entrepreneurship is important. But if you're going to attack a big problem, you're going to have to persevere. It's likely not going to be an overnight success. And that was certainly the lesson for us with AOL. It took us really 10 years before we finally broke through, and we stuck with it. And eventually things kind of moved in the right direction, and we were able to become the best performing stock of the 1990s. We went from a market value when we went public in 1992 of $70 million to $160 billion 8 years later. So that proves that if you stick with it, eventually things can really take off, and eventually you can build a significant, valuable enterprise that also improves the world. That was my lesson from AOL. That was my lesson in the first wave. And hopefully this book, The Third Wave, will help inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to take on the next big problems in society and create the next big iconic companies that really can change the world. But they're going to only be successful, in my opinion, if they really embrace those three P's around partnership and policy and perseverance.
And you don't have to necessarily go to Silicon Valley anymore.
You do not. You do not. That's a whole chapter called Rise of the Rest. Regional entrepreneurship is really going to take off in the third wave. So if you want to be in California, New York, or Massachusetts, good for you. But if you want to be in some other part of the country, indeed some other part of the world, you're going to see much more innovation in those places in the third wave.
Good deal. Well, the book again is called Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future by Steve Case. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Steve Case for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Steve Case and learn more about some of the exciting new startups he's funding at revolution.com, as well as some of the philanthropic work and impact investing he does at casefoundation.org. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd encourage you to read his new book, The Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. I'll include an Amazon link where you can order it in the show notes for this episode and on our website at kickasspolitics.com. Or if you'd prefer to listen to the audio version, you can download that for free through a special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. And don't forget to take our listener survey so we can keep this show free and find other advertisers who are best matched to you, our listeners. Just take 5 minutes to go to podsurvey.com/kick and take the survey. And when you're done, be sure to register for that $100 Amazon gift card giveaway. And once again, before you start your Amazon shopping this Christmas, visit the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com. and copy our Amazon link into your web browser first. Then Amazon will kick us a little coin for every order you make this season. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/kickassnews. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kickass News. Kickass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.